farms and in animal farming, and they totally cleaned up the industry, and salmonella cases have plummeted as a result. If you plot out the incidence of salmonella in countries with the occurrence of salmonella in chicken coops, there is this incredible correlation in countries that have a lot of salmonella in the chicken coops compared to the ones that, that don't.
Okay, another question?
That's right. So we are funded by from Brussels by the European Commission.
And then are there still any difficulties as far as sharing data across countries? So even though it's an EU organization, I mean, all these different countries are collecting their own data, and are people proprietary about their information, don't really want to share it, or what are you encountering?
So Europeans tend to live in pigeonholes, you know, culturally and linguistically, and then lots of other reasons, because they've had, you know, thousands of wars and whatever. But we are trying to bridge that. It's difficult, and so we are they are obliged by law, if they want to join the European Union, to provide information on 49 diseases. So there are 49 reportable diseases that they need to report to us. And so we would like to use that information and link that to environmental data that's available.
We better move on, and we can have some time for questions later on that way for whoever. But the next presentation, thank you very much. Climate change, cook stoves, coughs and colds, evidence from Nepal on thinking global, globally and acting local. Surendu K. Patanayak. Thank you.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks, all of you, for staying on a nice day. So we're switching gears completely from this data-rich environment that you just saw in Jan's presentation and some more in Paul's, to a place in Nepal where some of this information is not there, and you're sort of building up the evidence base for the kinds of things that we want to do. Climate change has certainly sort of reignited the interest in global environmental health issues. It was something that was falling through the cracks, partly because it sort of cuts across ministries and sectors and divisions. The case in water and sanitation, if some of you came to the sessions yesterday, you would have seen that. But also because it's a multidisciplinary enterprise and it cuts across schools and departments and the way we are organized. So climate change is sort of forcing us to revisit how all of that is coming together, as Tony mentioned. What I'm going to present today is some evidence from Nepal on thinking global but acting local, looking particularly at one technology, improved cook stoves, which has both huge implications for the global warming, climate change impacts, as well as through indoor air pollution on local health effects. This is joint work with Meen Malla and Krishna Pant, colleagues in Nepal, and some of it is still rough, so we're working through that. I have no competing relationships to disclose. That said, we acknowledge funding from the South Asian Network of Development and Environmental Economists, several reviewers, and field staff. So in the next 13 minutes, I'll try to do three things. Give you a bit of an overview of this whole issue. Talk very briefly about the study designs. There are two separate studies which we've sort of combined into this presentation. And then talk about three sets of results relating to indoor air pollution, fuel consumption, and acute respiratory infections. I will also briefly talk about, well, if these are such great things, why are we not seeing greater adoption of these technologies? That draws partially on data that we have from here, but also from lots and lots of work we're doing on related technologies around South Asia and other parts of the world. Okay, so stoves seem to have these triple dividends. The obvious one that the public health audience sort of resonates with is this respiratory infections. If you look in any of the global burden of disease calculations, the WHO reports, it's the number one in that list. The numbers are phenomenal, 2 million, 3 million a year. That's astonishing. It's at the end of the session, that means 400 deaths. It's often blamed on indoor air pollution because of incomplete combustion of biomass fuel. So we're talking about firewood, dung, charcoal, and that stuff. Is that really a big fuel component? For those who don't go camping, you're thinking, well, in South Asia, well, in the world, it's about half the world relies on this kind of fuel. And in South Asia, 90% of rural citizens rely on biomass fuels. So that, if that wasn't a problem by itself, much of this harvesting of these fuels is not sustainable, really. There is no plantation that's sort of replenishing the supply, so it is degrading the local forests, and it's destroying or getting rid of a lot of local forests. So that's your second dividend. And the third is, because it's unsustainable, people like Kirk Smith, who's sort of one of the gurus of this field, have pointed out that the global greenhouse gas that are emitted from burning up these fuels are phenomenal in terms of the contribution to local climate. And much less has been done in terms of the final particles, the aerosols or the black carbon, which potentially have a more significant impact, partly because they are longer lasting and shorter lasting and sort of are local. So it looks like there is a reasonable and cheap solution, these improved cook stoves, which cost less than $50 per household. We should be able to knock this thing back. It is one of the most preventable of our diseases that we have confronted. This is sort of the setup. The shoe's going to drop, right? What do we know about this in places like South Asia and Nepal? Majid Azadi and other sort of big scientists pushing on this with Dan Kaman has this nice review not that long ago, which shows that really when you go out of the non-controlled experimental setting and you go and look at people in their houses, there is very little data. That one Kenya study is sort of, you know, replicated and talked about a lot, but how many of these Kenya studies do we have? So you know, we are not really changing the world, but we are adding to the evidence base on that front. Secondly, the co-benefits of improved cook stoves are not sufficiently documented. So often you have someone looking at fuel wood consumption, but not at health effects, people looking at health effects, but not at local deforestation, etc. And as I said, the underlying determinants of adoption are generally poorly understood. There was a session yesterday on environmental health where we talked about some of this. Some of my colleagues are here. So that's really where we are coming in, recognizing this gap. Those of you who have been to Nepal or seen Nepal, it's basically sandwiched between two giants, China up north and India in the south, and there are roughly three bands, the mountains, the hills, and the plains. And so our study sites, there's really one from the plains, one from the middle hills, and then one from the mountain. Again, in the interest of time, I'm not going to describe the whole sampling setup. There's two kinds of data that were collected from roughly 300 households in each of those settings, 400 in one setting actually. Indoor air monitoring and a subsample, so in the Chitwan Sangya region, it was PM10 in about 99 households, and in Ruswa, it was a finer PM measurement in 60 households and carbon monoxide in 200 households. And then there were household surveys to get at health, but mostly through symptoms, and we're focusing on ARI, chronic bronchitis, and asthma. Of course, we were trying to figure out the kinds of stoves, fuel, kitchen construction, information of that kind, and social demographics. The two technologies that we considered in this set of work was improved cook stoves and biogas, that's in the lower hills, and then smoke hoods in Ruswa. So the analysis is fairly simple at this point. I'm not going to talk about the other piece that we've done. There's a simple comparison of means across households in either group. Hopefully you're looking for the improved cook stoves doing well. And then recognizing that households who have cook stoves are otherwise different in many ways. We have some linear controls. And more advanced modeling, which I'm not going to talk about today in the interest of time, looking at the potential sort of reverse causality happening here. This is sort of the framework for the next three sets of tables, so let me just walk through this a little bit slowly. In the rows are measurements at the different sites. In the columns are the three technologies, biogas, improved cook stoves, and control groups, which have neither. Okay, so biogas doesn't exist in their mountain site. That's not what we studied there. And then the next column over is a simple means difference. If that t-stat is big, then it's a statistical difference. If it's small, then we don't see any difference. And then recognizing that there are other things going on, there's a regression-adjusted sort of t-statistic on the far right corner. So what do we see? At least in the mountains, you see clearly that the improved cook stoves, the smoke hoods, are doing One does in terms of getting rid of some of the indoor air pollution. Okay, so both finer particulate matter as well as carbon monoxide, that's significantly lower in the households that have improved cook stoves, whether you look at simple means or regression adjusted. In the other side, the biogas doesn't seem to do all that well, although it's, you know, it's a small sample, and so this thing is getting close to two, and then that's good enough. And the cook stoves, on the other hand, are clearly a beneficial technology. So this is what we should have expected. We see that. Now things get murkier when you start looking at the second and third round of benefits. Well, how about fuel wood consumption? Again, in the mountainside, clearly the improved cook stoves, which are much more efficient in the way that they hand burn fuel wood, are significantly using less fuel. And biogas uses significantly less fuel, but the improved cook stoves, the results is kind of murky at this point. Turning to respiratory infections, we have symptoms of COPD and child ARI. Okay, so there's two sets of prevalence data from each sets of household, and then there's two sets of technology, right? So this might look a bit confusing, but the bottom line is that in the Ruswa, the mountainside, you clearly see that the households with the intervention, with the cook stoves, have much lower rates of COPD and child ARI, whereas in the plains and in the middle hills, the results are not that clear for biogas households. They are pretty clear for the improved cook stoves. So these numbers are not that high, so this doesn't look like a statistical difference, whereas these are. There's other ways to look at the health impacts, at the cost that households incur when they have to treat these kids. And again, from the mountainside, it looks like the households would save money on the health costs if they invested in this technology, whereas in the other side, the results are not that clear. Some of the ambiguity in these results is coming from the fact that you can think of a household's decision to invest in this as being somewhat endogenous. If you're more sick, you're more likely to adopt, in which case the estimated coefficients are going to be biased downwards. The instrumental variable modeling, which I haven't talked about here, takes care of that, and we haven't fleshed that out for all the study sites to make sure that that gets rid of that problem. Okay, we did not do any ambient air monitoring here, but Kirk Smith has done this fairly impressive study in India, which has similar conditions, where he looks at the global warming commitment of the fuel delivered for cooking. And the global warming commitment comes out of both the quantity of the greenhouse gas that's produced by burning biomass fuel, but also the global warming potential, which is sort of a weighting factor depending on how long this species of greenhouse gas hangs out in the atmosphere. So what this is showing is, this is from this paper, and again in the Annual Review of Energy and the Environment, is that biogas outperforms even these non-renewable fossil fuels like LPG and kerosene, whereas these other sort of traditional biomass fuels in the different kinds of stoves are much worse in terms of their global warming potential. They sort of release it out there, again, because it's inefficient. So almost to the last slide here. What new work has shown, Kirk has been at this for a long, long time, is that compared to all the attention on the global warming potential of greenhouse gases, less has been paid to the pollutants in general. So black carbon, or soot, doesn't rise as far, sort of hangs around locally, but is also short-lived. And it is more potent in the near term, and it creates local problems. So the new work is not published, although initially Venkatraman et al. Have sort of talked about at least 40% of this black carbon really comes from biomass burning, the other 30% from fossil fuel and open burning. And if you put that, include the black carbon into the analysis, biogas and gasifiers of these more improved cooking technologies are 3 to 20 times lower in terms of their global warming commitment. Okay, so these are things that we didn't measure in our site, But certainly with the emission coefficients that are there, and when we sort of get this out in the publication, we will be able to produce some estimates based on that. Okay. It looks like, I mean, this should be a no-brainer for most households to adopt. And what I'm presenting here is partly based on analysis on that instrumental variable modeling in one site, partly based on visits to other site. I was there not that long ago, almost a year ago, so sort of checking out some of these things, but also analysis in related environmental health technologies that I've been doing in South Asia for a long time. As an economist, you wouldn't be surprised that the word supply and demand show up there, but basically, what drives a person to adopt this? They have to be willing. That means that they are fully informed, forward-looking, risk-bearing, and that, to some extent, is not true in many of these settings. Can we do something about that? Yes, I'll talk about that in a second. But beyond being willing, you also have to be able. And this is not simply a question of income constraints, which is often conveyed, but literally liquidity constraints. $50 is not something that a lot of people have around in one of these settings. Okay, you can get people motivated and wanting these things, but you have to have the infrastructure to deliver it. So it's not just a demand side problem, but also a supply side issue. And in the interest of time, I'm sort of just going to rush through this fact that social networks are instrumental in sort of promoting both the demand, but also facilitating the supply. So I have really literally scratched the surface here. Where there is smoke, there is fire, and I certainly don't want to cannibalize from the next talk because I have a stake in that as well. Any questions, etc., I'd be happy to take. Thank you.
I think you see these really are wonderfully diverse, but all interrelated at helping us think about the systems that we're going to have to solve to make climate change not a problem in our future, although it's already happening. We maybe have time for one question or comment. See a hand over there. Go ahead.
Thank you.